This is The Topic is Trek, episode 90 for Friday, April 30th, 2021. Coming up in this episode, no, Viacom did not read our memos. Save the date for 2 years from now. And the movie that stalled Star Trek, at least as far as movies go. All that and more right now on The Topic is Trek. I'll take potent potables for $200, Jordy. Welcome to The Topic is Trek, the podcast that runs on impulse power. Join us for a journey where no show has gone before. If it has to do with Star Trek, there's a good chance we'll talk about it. Sooner or later, because on this show, The Topic is Trek. Engage already. Well, hello, everyone, and welcome to another Trek-filled episode of The Topic is Trek, where we talk about Trek because it's the topic of The Topic is Trek.
Are you going somewhere with that?
Nope. Just saying the word Trek 1,000 times. There's disembodied voices, so I think we better get to the transporters as quickly as possible. First of all, beaming in to join me from parts unknown with the catchphrase that all the kids are talking about, it's Mr. Craig Stepp. He's muted.
Jordy, you're on mute again.
That was podcast gold right there, and I was muted. Oh, well.
His catchphrase was from Marcel Marceau.
Oh. Now that's a keeper.
Yeah.
We have a winner.
There we go.
And also beaming in is Mr. Chuck Tomasi.
I find myself growing fatigued again.
Must be the shots.
Yeah, go take a nap.
Well, we made reference to the fact in the title of this show that LeVar will be one of the guest hosts for Jeopardy.
Yes, I'm looking forward to that. Very much so.
Grumble, 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 grumble.
Oh, you didn't make it.
Oh, yes. Chuck is very upset that he's not one of the guest hosts.
He can host his own games.
That didn't come out right at all.
With the Hunger Games?
Yeah. I mean, his own Jeopardy game.
Had me worried for a second there. Who's offering up his tribute? Well, we have a lot to cover, I think, in this episode. We'll find out as we go through it. We're going to cover some news. Then we're going to talk about Star Trek Nemesis, and we'll end up with our legendary Warp Speed Roundtable.
Are we doing roundtable or are we doing shuttle part or airlock? What did we settle on?
Well, the roundtable is a shuttle part. That's the roundtable.
I'm so confused.
Just go with it.
Smile and wave, everybody.
Just remember, the topic is Trek. The topic is Trek, everyone. All right.
You know this is a drinking game every time we say Trek.
Oh, good Lord. You picked the wrong word.
All right. Well, speaking of the right word, I think it's time to get the word from a certain person because, Charlie, it's time to start subspace chatter, correct?
Okay, everybody, let's go.
Remember that being Charlie?
You don't need all that subspace chatter.
Now that's the Charlie we know and hate right there.
Yeah.
All right, we're going to start off with a story that Chuck will tell us about where we go, curse you, Viacom, CBS.
Curse you, Viacom, CBS.
See, we just said it.
Just to keep us here at The Topic Trek on our toes, Viacom dropped some important information shortly after we released the last episode of this podcast. Ooh, shock and surprise.
It's shock and awe.
As part of the major...
Shock and awe.
Shock and awe, shock and awe, shock, 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 shock and awe. As part of a major reshuffling of its theatrical calendar, Paramount has announced new release dates for several major tentpole films. The motion pictures being shifted include Top Gun Maverick, Mission Impossible 7.
Seven! Mission Impossible 7!
700.
They're going to pass up Friday the 13th soon. And even Snake Eyes, G.I. Joe Origins.
Dash. Yes, it's Snake Eyes, colon, G.I. Joe, dash, Origins.
Don't talk about G.I. Joe's colon.
Wow. Whoa. All right.
That's all well and good, but...
It is not, but anyway.
What's the connection to Trek? Take a drink. It turns out that among the other films listed on the calendar is a slot for a film labeled simply as Star Trek. That's right.
Drink again.
Whatever script Bad Robot and Paramount are going with, apparently we will see the final product on screen June 9th.
Yay. Hey, that's great.
2023.
No, that's not so great. Wow.
We can only hope but wonder.
Yeah, I mean, last word that we had on this was it seemed like it was that writer that had worked on Discovery that was penning a script. I'm assuming since they're committing to a release date, but it's 2 years out. And obviously, as we can see from this list here, they just shuffle things around anyway. So if things fall through, they'll just push it out again, I guess. But man, you know, it's been ages.
Have they picked a director? Have we heard any other news? We don't know the director. So it's not
the writer.
Not the Tarantino one.
No, we don't know if the script that she's working on is Kelvin timeline, Prime timeline. Yeah. Does it involve new character? We did nothing.
It's Bad Robot. Well, doesn't that give us a hint?
It just gives us a hint that they're producing it because don't forget that, you know, J.J. Abrams' advice to Quentin Tarantino when he was working on something was, no one understands the Kelvin timeline. Do whatever you feel like doing. So,
oh, yeah.
Well, also, J.J. Abrams is kind of tied up with Warner Brothers because, remember, he's got a deal with them now. So he's got a lot going on. I doubt we'll see him direct anything.
It's all part of the mystery box.
Yeah, for Star Trek. Hey, and, I was thinking 2023, that's pretty quick. They may have to rush the special effects. So they'll have like the Enterprise come out in a string.
Yeah. Yeah.
They're going to get some like just a rubber piece of
quick,
something.
Give me a popsicle stick.
Yeah.
I don't have my kazoo. Otherwise, I'd do the orchestra for you.
Yeah, that's right. That's really low budget. Anyway, so the internet can be a great source of news.
It can.
Just like
can.
This show. Yeah.
Well,
but you have to be careful because fans out there. Recently when Michael Dorn tweeted, he tweeted out this cryptic message and everybody went nuts. It's like, just got the news. I mean, should I read it like him? Just yes. Got the news.
Well done. Like him. Well done.
Being called back into action. Starfleet calls hashtag AD. So it was the AD at the end of the tweet that should have had a lot of people wondering just where Worf would be appearing. The hashtag indicates the tweet is an ad, but of course, most people assume that Michael was confirming his appearance on season 2 of Star Trek Picard, which is now filming in California. However, a few days later, we learned that Michael Dorn was reprising Worf in a voice only for a new game, and it's a mobile game called Star Trek Legends, which is available exclusively in the Apple Arcade. But the game itself finds characters from all eras of Star Trek thrown together when the Nexus reappears. Ooh, they're soaring again. And you can gain access to over 60 Trek characters and put them together, away teams that include Michael Burnham, Dr. McCoy, and Captain Janeway. There's even a handy complement of red shirt characters. How about that?
There's coffee in that Nexus.
That's right.
Hey, there's always enough red shirts I think they pump them out of the replicator.
Yeah, I think you're right. I know when Dorn first tweeted this out that people were just jumping to a conclusion, but I think there was some more level heads going, well, I don't think so. And there were calls made to Viacom, CBS, and they said, well, what that tweet was about has nothing to do with any productions of Star Trek currently going on right now. So,
it took a while
to calm down on that one.
It's really not a stretch. They've had on Picard already, we've had about half of the TNG. Well, yeah, half of the main cast of TNG. Surely we're going to see the other half.
Mm.
I mean, it's not a big stretch, you would think. So
no.
I can see why it'd be easy to go, oh my God.
I'll be sold when we get Dwight Schultz.
Yeah.
Broccoli.
Barkley.
I've put together this new holographic emitter for your Android.
Barkley, today is a good day to die.
Is it still Captain Picard, Admiral Picard, Mr. Picard? How should I address you?
Yeah. Hmm.
I don't know. Did any of you get a chance to look at the game footage or actually even play this? I don't have any Apple product
not. Actually, is there not a Star Trek game? I'm trying to remember the name of it Android where you can.
That's Star Trek Timelines, and that has characters from all
Timelines. That's it. That's what I was thinking of.
It has characters from all the different eras in there.
And
as
you
well.
Play that, right?
Right. That's except for the space battles, though, you don't have any moving characters. It's more you pick a team and you do a function, but you don't have an animation of that. Whereas this game is it's kind of a combination of that aspect of Star Trek Timelines and a game more like Star Trek Online or Star Trek Fleet Command, where you have actual character. I mean, they're caricaturish versions
right
of the characters, but you have them doing attack and defense and that type of, you know, taking turns to that very civilized type of battle that you have in certain games where they're standing in rows, you know, one row on this side, one row on that side, and they all take their turns hitting, smashing on the other person, then they jump back and the next person jumps out, smashes, and then jumps back again. Very civilized. They have some amusing dialogue that is, it's not spoken. It's, you just have the words on screen.
Yeah.
They seem very in character.
You got to read.
Yeah, I know. There's reading involved.
The subtitled film.
And yeah. I don't know, you know, there's obviously not an infinite amount of these type of interactions, but I thought it was funny because the video that I was watching, the first two characters that Worf runs into are Burnham and McCoy, and they both react to the fact that he's a Klingon in a Starfleet uniform. And, you know, the first time he says to Burnham something like, you know, you berate a fellow Starfleet, you know, officer and blah, 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 blah. And then McCoy says something, he goes, you know, this is becoming tiresome. Is this going to happen every time somebody shows up, they're going to ask me about this?
Right.
So
that's pretty funny.
It seems like fun. I'm sure it gets repetitive after a while, like any of the games do, but and 60 characters is not a lot, but I think that really is a function of the popularity of the game. I'm sure that if it becomes really popular, you just keep adding the Star Trek Timelines game that I'm playing just constantly is adding more and more characters to it.
So, nice.
I think
I'm not super thrilled that it's only on Apple, but.
Well, I don't know whether Apple reached out to have somebody develop this game so they would have exclusive content or whether, you know, the developer was just looking for an angel to back it. And Apple said, sure, but we want exclusive. I don't know.
Yeah.
It gives them a selling point for it.
Sure. Oh, I mean, great for Apple. It sucks for those of us that don't have. Yeah. An iPad.
I can't have everything, you know, because where would you put it? That's what I say.
In your pocket.
Oh, all right. I got a hole in my pocket. Let's move on, shall we?
Yeah.
Production on Star Trek Discovery in Toronto has halted for 2 weeks due to potential exposure to an individual who has tested positive for COVID-19.
Uh-oh.
I have an abundance of caution.
Red alert.
So not only did Discovery immediately shut down, but also Strange New Worlds, which is also filming in Toronto, very close by to where Discovery is filming, also shut down. And when it turned out that the individual whom we have learned was involved with craft services had not been to the facility where Strange New Worlds is shot, that production resumed work. So they were only down for about half a day or so, as opposed to Discovery that's going to be down for 2 weeks because that person was in the building where Discovery is shot.
Dang.
Strange New Worlds did have another close encounter a while ago when a guest star who had come to Toronto to film an episode tested positive, but again, they were never near the production facility itself. Phew. And Discovery on, production on Discovery is expected to resume on May 6th. Now, I don't know how close to the edge they were on meeting, because I believe Discovery is supposed to premiere this year. And if they were like, well, we'll premiere like the last week in December, are we really going to push this? And if they're suddenly down for 2 weeks, is that going to...
New Year's Eve. Yeah.
I don't know.
Hey, when I read this in the show notes, I kept thinking, you know, it's the, obviously the virus. And then I kept thinking of Wesley saying, you mean I'm drunk? I feel so strange, but also good.
That's not how it works.
It's not the same virus?
No.
Oh, okay.
Not at all.
That'd be great, wouldn't it?
If COVID made you feel like you were drunk?
Yeah, why not? Save you some time.
There you go.
Some money. All right.
Well, let's segue from talking about Strange New Worlds to Chuck's story.
Speaking of Strange New Worlds.
Oh, wait. No, sorry.
Nice job. We know that the show will feature an episodic format, similar to TOS. And Anson Mount, who portrays, of course, Captain Christopher Pike, explained the advantage of this format, saying, I'm not going to try an Anson Mount impression. Star Trek is by nature episodic. Now, that doesn't mean that Star Trek can't be other things. Star Trek can be a lot of things. But classic Trek is really founded on the big idea of the week. And the big idea of the week needs room to breathe. In serialized structure, you're now trying to take care of so many relationships that there doesn't tend to be a lot of room for that. Now, with that said, I think Discovery does a phenomenal job with that structure, and I was very fortunate to be a part of it. Normally, serialized is my taste as an actor, but this really felt like it needed to be episodic. The man has spoken.
So I agree with that sentiment that when you think back about individual episodes of Discovery, I mean, you're very often servicing the story arc of the season, mm-hmm. and you just don't have a lot of time to devote to the, as Anson Mount was saying here, the big idea of the week, that it really kind of takes, it's sharing the time with
right.
the big story. And it almost a lot of times it has to be related to the big story. It can't be a one-off. It can't be its own unique thing.
Well, I could tell you, I'm looking forward to this because I love Star Trek when they do a story of the week kind of thing and maybe have a little arc. That's fine. But I want to see some character development, and I like the tentpole movies, but I want some episode. And a good example of that, The Mandalorian. In Star Wars, I thought that was great. You get a little backstory. Falcon and the Winter Soldier, also is a Marvel.
Whoa.
Listen.
On this show, the topic is Trek.
So on the Falcon and the Winter Soldier, I know. You got a lot of backstory on those characters because there were six episodes that weren't like a big movie. There were some good character moments. So I'm looking forward to this, you know, where we focus on different people and characters and get a little deeper.
Right. Because I think, you know, with that type of format, it can be an issue that a character is having, and it's about the character development, you know, for that person and how others relate to him. And it doesn't also have to go, oh, by the way, there's this other thing we've got to be addressing because we can shoehorn in that other aspect of stuff.
Yeah. Well, the last three movies we looked at, the main focus was Picard and Data. You know, I love those characters, but come on, let's mix it up.
All right. Well, then the good thing is that Chuck was saying that on this show, the topic is Trek. And so I think that.
Okay. I get it.
I think that Craig's next story is going to segue right into that nicely.
Yeah, so if you like Star Wars...
Well, what did I just say? What did I just say? Were you not listening?
Right.
If you like... Listen. If you're a fan of Star Wars, kick him off. You're done.
Give me a minute.
Get out. Get out.
Just give me a minute, Chuck. Chill out. Relax.
Not at all. So.
Light some incense and chill out. All right, so if you're a fan of Star Wars, also, you may be familiar with Transdoshian, a bounty hunter named Bosk. With the a bounty hunter named Bosk. I am, because I saved up, got the free action figure.
I can tell you're a huge fan. You can't even pronounce the name.
Bosk.
Well, you can't. Bosk is easy. It's Bosk.
Yeah. I saved up the little things on the back of the Kenner.
The proof of purchase.
Yeah. And mail them in and got him Bosk for free. I got Bosk for free.
I got the display stand for the first set. I've got two of them, I think. Someplace.
Oh, the cardboard one? The one they gave out because they didn't have the action figures?
Focus here, people. Focus.
No, the plastic one, the gray plastic one that you could, I think you can move each of them individually, and then it's got a cardboard backing on it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right.
Oh, wait. Anyway. We were in the story here.
Yeah, so, okay, Bosk. And then, And you may have also, though, he looked a lot like a Gorn, which he did. Well, the latest issue of Star Wars Bounty Hunters kind of confirms your theory. In the comic, the reptilian Bosk battles a character who is eerily resemblance to James T. Kirk.
Dun, 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 dun,
he used a two-fisted...
Yeah.
Yeah. And there's even a reference made to the slow-motion fight at Vasquez Rocks, just like I'm talking about with the two fists, complete with Bosk tossing a large boulder at his enemy. And the other character fashioned some gunpowder with Captain some things he just kind of lying on the ground.
It's kind of hard to portray in comics, though, the sheer non-volume of the giant boulder that gets, picked up,
Yeah.
You can't show that. Hey, that's made of styrofoam. Come on, who are you trying to kid there?
He's just really strong, and everything looks like styrofoam.
Yes.
That is your enemy. I gotta stop smoking.
Wait a minute. I see something missing in the show notes here. We don't have any news from
Vulcan Alberta, Canada.
Nothing new from Vulcan Alberta, Canada. However, I think now...
There's nothing going on there at all.
There's nothing going on. They closed the entire town. But yeah. We talked last time about, when it's open. I'm assuming that by now that the center is open. So I'm going to put on my list of things to do now to get in touch with them and see if we can get somebody from the visitor center.
We still need the mayor. I think we need to get
communication channels have been closed, Captain.
Well, we covered a lot of stories here about Star Trek and...
The topic good, is people. Star.
It's all good. But we have links to an additional 22 stories, including one that claims Jonathan Frakes regrets not having directed Star Trek Nemesis.
Imagine. I think we all do.
Maybe because he wouldn't have had to been on screen. But anyway, we'll talk about that in just a few moments. But right now, it's time for my favorite part of the show, and that's where I get to say goodbye, Charlie.
Goodbye, Charlie.
Sleep. I want to stay.
No.
That would be illogical.
Every time. All right, and it's time to head out on our main mission with an appropriate sound effect.
Oh, I don't know. How about this one? Hope you're listening at double speed.
This starship goes from 0 to 60 in about an hour.
12 parsecs later.
All right. Well, what are we going to be talking about there, Chuck?
We are going to be talking about Star Trek Nemesis. So Star Trek Nemesis, of course, was a story by John Logan, Rick Berman, and... Didn't know this without reading it here. Brent Spiner. Screenplay was by John Logan, directed by Stuart Baird, and it premiered on December 13th, 2002. The film has the distinction of being, the worst performing film in terms of box office of the entire catalog of Trek films. It's hard to get below Star Trek V, but they did it.
That's right. Playing by the golf rules. But here's a brief synopsis. A coup d'etat, or Admiral Janeway puts it, some kind of internal political shakeup.
Oh, some kind of. Take a drink.
I worked in a some kind of for you there.
See? Take a drink. Take a drink
again. On Romulus brings a new praetor, Shazon, to power.
Did you watch the movie?
Shinzon.
It's like what you when you wear your catcher's pads, you put your shins on.
Yeah.
Oh, I thought it was like shins on,
shins off.
Yeah.
However, Shinzon is not a Romulan, but rather a genetic duplicate of Captain Jean-Luc Picard. After being banished from the planet Remus for years, he now plots to draw the Starship Enterprise and her crew, they kind of go hand in hand, into a deadly confrontation and destroy the Federation once and for all.
Captain Picard.
Evil laugh. All right, so I thought I would get a fair amount of fun facts because the fun may stop after the fun facts. Anyway, here's in a blink or you'll miss it cameo. Brian Singer, director of the first two X-Men movies, which featured Sir Patrick Stewart, can be seen as a replacement tactical officer. But let's also look at some bookends and histories in the movie itself, which I found these really a good way of thinking about coming full cycle on stuff. Will Wheaton, as Wesley Crusher, filmed a short scene with Patrick Stewart and Gates McFadden for Star Trek Nemesis, but it was later cut. He can still be seen sitting at the main table at the wedding reception. In the clip, we learn that he is now serving on the USS Titan. Everybody wants to be on the Titan.
Yeah. What's going on with the Titan? You know, it sounds like a great place to hang out.
It's a jazzy place to be. Obviously, Wesley was in the first episode of TNG, and this appearance finds him returning for the last voyage of the Enterprise E, in this case.
Captain Picard, if you want to marry my mom, it's okay with me.
That's the
Shut up, Wesley.
And insane.
There are references made to all five live-action Star Trek series that had been released by this point. Obviously, the cast of The Next Generation is present. Riker employs the defensive pattern Kirk Epsilon.
Saw that.
Yeah. I heard that. Yeah.
As well as dispensing of Shinzon's viceroy with a "I have had enough of you" kick to the face.
I was waiting for the double fist punch myself in that Kirk move.
While he was hanging with fist, he had used a double fist punch. And
right. That's how awesome Riker is.
Riker discussed the Reman participation in the war with the Dominion, which of course would be a reference to Deep Space Nine. Mm-hmm. Admiral Janeway makes an appearance.
Yep.
And the USS Archer, NCC 44278, is listed among the Federation starships waiting at Sector 1045.
They're still off at Wolf 359.
Yeah.
Cleaning up the mess.
In her briefing to Picard, Admiral Janeway makes reference to three of the four adversaries in the Next Generation movies, the Sona, the Borg, and the Romulans. The original script also had her mention that pesky Dr. Soren. However, since Voyager was in the Delta Quadrant at the time of that incident, it did not seem logical for her to make that reference.
Why not? I mean, she would have caught up on the news she missed.
She would have, but I mean, she might not know everything about everything, so it seemed like, let's leave that out.
You dispatched Kirk nicely.
And once again, Jerry Goldsmith returned to score this Star Trek film. It was the last in the initial string of big screen Star Trek adventures, with Goldsmith's theme for Star Trek the Motion Picture bookending the entire 10-film series. He even got to score a second flyby of the USS Enterprise in dry dock.
We'll talk about that later.
So that's our fun facts about Star Trek Nemesis. And now we get to talk about the film itself.
I'm going to start off with one point.
All right, do it.
Dr. Crusher serves no purpose in this film, yet she appears twice.
Wait, no, she did say that I can't underestimate how dangerous Thaleron radiation is. That was her purpose.
Yeah, right, okay.
She did discover that Shinzon was dying.
And, yeah, he was a clone.
Yeah, but anybody could have said those things. That's what I'm saying. There's nothing.
It wouldn't have made sense if anyone else had said it. It had to be the doctor.
I disagree. What if it was Data?
Yeah, well, Data's already got enough things to do.
I know. I'm just saying.
He was already playing two parts.
Yeah, Brent Spiner, you know, hurt his back on this film because he was carrying the whole thing.
Yeah, exactly. And a story by Brent Spiner, by the way. Oh, my goodness, my goodness. Yeah, well, I think the same can be said for most of the cast. I mean, this gets back to the discussion we were having earlier about the episodic format serving character development well, and the movies just really don't, because even though some movies are better than others at balancing out characters in them, you're always going to focus on the main leads, and everyone else is going to have a line here, a line there, a little thing to do here, a little thing to do there. It's exceptionally bad in this movie, but it's kind of the nature of it most of the time anyway. But yeah, I agree that it wasn't much for her to do. To state the obvious, things.
Right.
All right.
Okay. I'm sorry. Go ahead. I'll let somebody else have the floor.
I'm going to start right at the top. New font.
Right at the top.
New font.
New font. Thumbs up or thumbs down for new font?
The medieval font or whatever that
is. It was like.
It was Comic Sans, actually. It was very, very, very sad.
We had backwards E's in Nemesis. It was, I was not a fan of this new font.
It didn't look right.
I also wondered, you had the person sabotage the Romulan Council, and I wasn't sure how it worked that they got turned to stone to the fact that they were solid stone. It was like,
I thought it was more of an ash.
No, because it fell over and broke.
Oh, I thought it.
Oh yeah, when he hits the floor.
They were listening to the ELO. I turned to stone when you were gone. I turned to stone.
Also, that character really, I didn't understand her because.
Oh, Dorada or whatever her name was.
She just went from sabotaging, killing everybody on the Romulan Council, like completely obliterating that entire room, to then saying, oh, well, he's going to wipe out humanity, so that's a problem. What?
Yeah. Yeah. All of a sudden she gets, she gets it. And I'm like, whoa, whoa, whoa.
Yeah. She destroyed her own people. She has no problem destroying the Senate, but she's got a soft spot for Earth.
Yeah. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I do too. So we got that in common.
All our stuff is here. That's why we like it.
Hey, by the way, speaking of her, the first thing that stuck out with me when you see her, talking to Shinzon, and then her face, it's like they couldn't afford to make the green go all the way down her neck. Oh. It's like, it looked like it stopped about or right at her chin or something. You could see fleshy color. I was like, it just took me out of everything.
Well, that's it. She's half human and she doesn't want him. She just want Earth destroyed. That's it.
You found it.
Of course. Clinton, you're a genius.
That was the secret.
All makes sense now.
The secret was in the bad makeup.
And right. I like the fact that once again, we have to figure out a way to have Worf happen to be on the Enterprise for him to go out on this mission.
Worf, what are you doing here?
Romulan ale should be illegal.
It is. Right.
Yeah.
And then when Data starts singing, Irving Berlin.
Yeah. How does he know that it's Earth? Well, I suppose he was raised by Earth people. He might have had exposure to
Berlin. We found out Guinan was married 23 times. That was news.
Yeah. Like Jordy's double take. What?
I have.
Humana.
All right. Back to the things that are unbelievable.
And they twice went to Dr. Soren. It's very weird.
They could detect positronic radiation from like across the quadrant.
Yeah.
But they couldn't find the pieces when they were standing 2 meters away from them. It's around here somewhere.
Ship.
Nor
could they find the cloaked ship that was right in front of them.
And who were the people that were chasing them on the equally powerful dune buggies?
Mad Max.
Yeah, I mean, we're at Thunderdome all of a sudden.
Well, they did say before they beamed down that it was a pre-warp society in the industrial age. So,
but not pre-doomed buggy society. Yeah, apparently
they already invented Captain, they've advanced dune buggy technology. I'm not sure how we're going to do. But because I'm thinking, all right, so the plan was, the brilliant plan that Shinzon had was somehow unknown how this happens. He comes across B4.
Yeah. Yeah.
Breaks him apart with this.
No, the Jawas took him apart because there were pieces in a cave. Did you know?
It was a sand dune planet.
Yeah. But so they put all those pieces there. Mm-hmm. And how stupid would that be if all of a sudden, that was their big plan and the people on the dune buggies kill Picard? Because it's like, we're going to put all these pieces in a place where you might get killed.
Yeah.
I didn't understand any of that thought process.
Well, the big plot all I had was, okay, so these pieces were put around to attract, the Enterprise. But what if they just hadn't detected it?
Right.
Just went on about their way.
You know what? We're going to go to the wedding on Beta Z. We'll stop by this way later sometime.
Yeah. In a year. We'll be back way in about a year.
Or we'll send the hood over to pick the pieces up or something like that. I mean,
the shuttle Argo, I think, was all right. But as soon as the dune buggy came out, I was like, you've got to be kidding me. The dune buggy is even shaped like the shuttle.
Yeah. It was a little utilitarian.
Yeah. And then there was times when they had the glasses on and then for a while they were riding without them. All of a sudden they're back on.
Well, that was the dusty part and the not dusty part. You know.
Take it back.
I do that during the podcast if you watch closely.
Because
there's dust flying in my eyes from this show. We did. I'm sorry.
The dune buggy was ridiculous.
We need to get Dr. Aaron McDonald on here to science our way out of how the frack are Romulus and Remus so close together. That is scientifically nonsense, if you ask me.
Well, it is interesting because I don't know. Definitely in the original series, we didn't have reference to Remus, right? I don't know when Remus actually came in as a reference, whether that was...
I thought it was in TNG.
Because I'm not sure if it was the novels or whether it was TNG. Okay. So you're introducing something that, okay, it's clever because there's Romulus and Remus who are the founders of Rome.
Right.
But yeah, you have to deal with the fact that, okay, where are these things in relationship to each other? Oh, they happen to be right next door.
And they're right next door to each other, yet almost nothing is known about Remus. You could look out your bedroom window and see it. How could you not know anything?
Where did that planet come from? Around.
You can look at it all the time. The same side is always facing towards you.
Close your bathroom curtains because Remus is right there.
We thought that was just a moon. Oh. Okay,
yeah,
that was a dumb joke. Okay, fine. I got it. I got quiet.
Yeah. Cue the crickets. But anyway.
So B4 has this redundant data port and nobody thinks to check it out.
No, it's fine. Well, that wacky doctor.
They pointed it out, but they just went, oh, it must be something.
Yeah. It's like when you get that extra port on your computer and you're like, oh, well, I don't have anything to plug in there. So whatever.
B4 was made a long time ago. Why has he got a USB-C port on the back of his neck?
I will say that this is one of the first times that I can recall in a science fiction TV show or movie that something happens before they call attention to it. So the scimitar is coming out of cloak, and then Data says, Captain, and he turns around and looks at it. It's not like you hear Data say, Captain, first, and then the scimitar appears, because that happens all the time on sci-fi shows. I'm like, what were you looking at and calling attention to if we just saw it happen? So I will give him credit for the timing on that scene.
Well, what I wonder is, all right, we had that ridiculous scene.
Which one?
Can you narrow that down a little bit?
in Insurrection.
Oh.
Was it Insurrection? I mean, they're all starting to blow together now. With stellar cartography.
I
had the problem with stellar cartography.
Well, there was a Nexus scene in stellar cartography.
Okay, I had a... Oh, right, right.
Generations.
So I had a problem with Generations. I had a problem with the fact that it's still a cartography, yet it's a flat, one-dimensional, just directly in front of you, not all around you thing in a round room. But, okay, now, supposedly, I'm thinking that the E is as big as, if not bigger than...
D?
D?
Yeah.
Why is now still a cartography a closet?
We didn't really need to use it that much. Just put it in there.
It's now got a virtual screen, so it looks bigger on the inside.
Yeah, well, I was trying to figure out the size of the ship as well.
It's a closet style cartography that has no buffer. Because as soon as they go into that distortion area,
yes,
everything goes away.
All communications will be down while we're in the rift. Like, okay.
Even the
did
screen.
You not download your maps?
Exactly. That's what I mean. It's like, really?
Yeah. Well, I was trying to figure out the size of the ship. And based on, it looked like Riker was fighting in a, like a stand-up Jeffries tube or walkway. And
The Jeffries tubes are a little bigger, which is nice, but they did end up fighting on that same gantry that, you know, Kirk falls off of.
Yeah.
Borrowed from the other movie. I want to point
the
out
the walls in the Jeffries tube look like they're Borg technology.
Yes, they were very Borg-esque. Yeah. Leftover from, you know, two movies ago. I want to point out that we've had yet another unauthorized computer access.
Mm-hmm.
They really got to get stronger passwords on that. And
well,
that team.
It's stronger than password 1234. Oh, I don't think so. What's that magical
login data? Password data.
Yeah. Add.
Actually, the password was B4. It's really weird.
Yeah. Well, speaking of B4, I do have one huge plot hole.
One?
Yeah. Well, okay. So wait a minute. All right. So B4 is on the scimitar, right?
No.
Scimitar.
No, he was not on the scimitar.
Yeah. He was.
Data was beamed over, impersonating
B4. No, he got the data from, he got the,
none they of the read, but it was a false.
It was data impersonating B4. Because that's how he got.
Because he goes away and then he comes back again to talk to Picard. He's the one that's been there all along.
Yeah.
You're right. Never mind. I was going to say, how did he get back to the Enterprise?
No.
But I like how he's just roaming around. You know, nobody, you know, B4 is just like, walking around, no problem.
The one thing that they did well was that single scene where they start with B4's face and then the camera pans overhead and ends up at Data and he's still talking in the same sentence. I liked that effect. I know motion control camera and everything, but I was really trying to find some flaw in that, but could not find one. So I think they did that well. I did find out that Shinzon really is like Picard because his viceroy, when he was holding onto his head, was basically like Cerebro. So, yeah, there was a major crossing of the streams there.
Yeah, I see that. Oh, and I have to address one of the elephants in the room. Okay. In Star Trek VI and Star Trek X, we have psychic rape.
Yes.
I found that, and knowing the fact that also in this movie, it was going to happen twice originally.
Oh, twice? Really?
Yeah. She was going to be invaded again, I guess, in one of the, in the turbo lift. It's like, did we need to go there once? Did we need to go there?
Yeah. Why were they picking on Troy?
Because she's empathic. She's the only one with any kind of mental powers.
I mean, I found that kind of bizarre. It's like, okay, really, you know, five films ago, we went through this as well.
Yep.
It seemed a bit much to do that.
Yeah, that was a little weird.
Data did learn something from Spock. I mean, he gave him the Spock, the Vulcan neck pinch.
Yeah, I saw that.
That was very nicely done. And did you notice the Enterprise now leaves smoke trails?
Ooh,
when it goes to warp.
It's advanced technology.
And skid marks.
I called up the, of course, the five, one of the 5,000 places I can look at the relative size of, Enterprises.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So it The Galaxy class is 643 meters long and the Sarvan is 685, but it's not as bulky of a ship, but I think it would still have room for the same stellar cartography.
I'm calling you out again, Nemesis.
I'm calling you out.
Can anyone explain to me why we need a force field around the warp core?
When it was knocked offline for...
When it goes out 3 seconds later.
Yeah. I thought it was funny. I was like, okay, got the technology, got a force field around there. And then a little bit later, warp core's down. It's like, what? Yeah. Come on.
They probably have a paperclip holding it so it doesn't eject itself. You know, come on, no,
it's just a little pin. Yeah. Drop the warp core.
The cotter pin pulls out.
Yeah. That's it.
I did appreciate from an effects perspective the battle scene with the Scimitar and the Romulans and the Enterprise, because hey, I'm a sucker for a good space battle.
Yeah, absolutely.
That was actually
the problem I have with the space battle was it was almost literally half of this movie. That's how little plot they had. We get to that space battle almost halfway through the movie, and it just
I thought it was later than that.
No, it just keeps going and going and
it's
going.
Like the,
and
going it's and like almost going. 45 minutes worth of standoff and talking and shooting and blowing up stuff.
Why would a Romulan use the phrase "we're dead in the water"?
They got water on Romulus, Remus, whatever.
I don't think it has the same metaphorical meaning. No, no, that is clearly a Earth.
We're
phrase.
Dead in the Jafar.
Yeah. You can't
we're dead
say
in the
that.
Aquifer.
You can't say that.
Yeah, I tell you, I do like the special effects. I think they did all that stuff's fine. But when you have Shinzon in the story of the movie, he messed me up now.
Keep it PG there. There we go.
Yeah, when he's in the movie, that's the part. See, I never found his motivation. All right. Yeah. I understand he got a raw deal, but why is he mad at Picard? Just because he was supposed to take his spot?
I think he's mad at him because he looks at Picard and sees somebody who he considers to have you have it all, whereas I got shuttled off to Remus and just, you know, spend time in the mines, the dilithium mines, and had to claw my way out to become somebody, and they, you know, so I think he thinks, you know, like, I'm going to completely obliterate you so that now that is my ultimate victory of
and the Federation and all the people that, you know, died along the way. I'm like, I just don't get his motivation is what I'm saying.
I think it was
now,
kind
Khan,
of,
you know, and you see why he got a raw deal.
He was peeved. Yeah.
Yeah. So, but I never, even when I first saw this movie, I'm like, what? Why was he angry again?
Yeah.
I didn't get it.
Yeah, and it seemed to change. Like it wasn't a solid thing you could latch
onto. Picard even mentioned that.
Yeah. He's no longer interested in me. Yeah. This is no longer about me. Can we talk about that Thaleron weapon?
No.
That takes 7 minutes to activate?
It's too slow to be effective. The targeting arms are half open in 5 seconds, but it's going to take 7 minutes to activate, even though Geordi says when the targeting arms are fully opened, it's ready to fire. But yet they were open for like, about 6.5 minutes before
It's like that whenever you load it, you're loading, downloading something, the last 10% is the longest of the bar.
That's it. The Thaleron arms are open. The targeting arms are open. And we're at 95% of that loading. And the Remans are just going, come on.
This is driving me nuts.
I like the very English accented, classy computer voice on board the Reman ship.
Yes.
Okay.
So you're staring down the barrel of this gun that apparently only points forward. Why don't you just get behind the Scimitar?
Well, I'm assuming that
they had enough thrusters to run them into the nose of the machine.
Right, and I'm assuming that they still have impulse power because they smash the front of the ship into the Scimitar, that's not where engineering is. So if they had impulse engines before, you assuming they still have them now. Yeah. Right. Why they don't back up or do anything. Well, actually they are supposed to be moving because you have a very, although you don't get that shot, you have that very Star Trek II, The Wrath of Khan indication that whatever speed it can muster, which is just impulse, just like the Enterprise when Khan was going to explode Genesis.
Spoiler alert.
Get away as far as you can from it. So that indicated that, yes, they still had impulse power and they could maneuver.
Yeah. So Data's spacewalk?
Data's Superman flight, yes.
Okay. No, that's not... No, I'm sorry. You're not going to do a Superman. He goes run, 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 and launches and somehow stabilizes into a level. He would have gone head over heels that entire time. That just ain't happening because Geordi blows the hatch, which blows him out. You know.
Also, what I can't really figure out Geordi's function there.
He had to enable the force field and... like blow the hatch.
Start one and open the next one.
Yeah.
Because Data couldn't say computer open hatch.
Well, he was
because
running.
They were contractually obligated to put LeVar Burton in the movie for 35 minutes worth.
All right. No, because it's just like, all right, so Geordi's coming with him. And it's like, let me get on my Game Boy and do some stuff while you go do your thing there, Data.
Why was Picard so stunned when Shinzon died, that he couldn't move? I can understand when Data died that he was, you know, on the bridge and he was in shock, but why did he like just shut down when Shinzon died?
Yeah, he basically stood there for like a few minutes.
I think it's because he did realize that at his core, you know, his being, that he was identical to Picard. So to him, it's like seeing a death of himself in a way, because they talked about the similarities of things that they experienced as children and so forth. And I think he just saw it as he could have been an extension of me. He could have been like me. And then that's just gone.
Well, good on Patrick Stewart. Good on Patrick Stewart's acting, but I wasn't that attached to Shinzon as a character. I want to know. Who reactivated B4 and why?
Well, he's talking to Picard, so
he's a security threat. Data said, "I'm shutting you down indefinitely." Apparently, no one got the memo. Hey, look, there's an android over here. Let's turn him on. See what happens. He already, you know, blew through our computer security, so why not?
Yeah.
Right. I didn't think to go back and check. Somebody else probably knows this. I do recall Riker first encountering Data.
Mm-hmm.
I do recall him trying to whistle.
Do you know the song? I did.
But was he whistling Blue Skies?
No. Pop Goes the Weasel.
Yeah.
Okay. Because it implied that it was the same song again. But I couldn't recall.
That would have been cool. Was. But no.
I thought at first it was something from The Wizard of Oz, like, you know, If I Only Had a Brain or something. But did serve that. It was Pop Goes the Weasel.
Yeah. Hey, and something that kind of also took me out of everything, I don't know why, because we've got so many different alien species walking around with different looks, but the Nosferatu Remans just bugged the crap out of me. I don't know why.
I kind of liked them.
You did?
Yeah.
Okay. I didn't think you were very imaginative. I was like, yeah.
What would you have made that? I mean, you can't just give them another forehead ridge or something.
Can you?
I know. Clearly you can. See Insurrection for what you can do with an alien. Yeah, can be humans.
Or don't have to do. Yeah. So, final scene. They're in space dock. They're getting repaired. And Worf says, "The warp engines are ready to go online." We're still, what? Where are we going to go?
We're going to take the entire structure with us and just go.
Yeah,
you've been on that space station for far too long.
What is he doing? I mean, Yeah, okay. Just don't ask somebody to engage or go to Warp 10 or something.
Right.
So I sent you guys, you probably already saw it. I remember seeing this at one point as well. The ending that got cut that they had for mm-hmm. the film, which is the new first officer coming on board.
Yes.
And Riker tells him, and Jean-Luc loves to be called, the captain loves to be called Jean-Luc. If you want to really endear yourself.
I thought that was hilarious. I thought it was funny.
Right. And you end with a beauty shot of the Enterprise warping out to the music rather than, and the exciting conclusion, last shot is it's in dry dock.
Yeah. Yeah. And just fade to space and that's it. Yeah. Actually, those deleted scenes that you sent, I thought the new officer, the new officer coming in, I thought that was funny. But then when it goes on and they're checking out the chair and all that, I was like, okay, this part goes on too long. And they make the joke about the seatbelts. It's like, okay.
No,
I'm that glad y'all removed all done. That.
Right. Yeah. But I mean, you shoot more than you need and you edit down. So then, they could have obviously cut part of that.
Even Picard says, about time.
There were a couple parts that I did appreciate from an acting standpoint. Data's death obviously was emotional, and the toast at the wedding was very well done too. Had a little mm-hmm. bit of humor, had a little bit of emotion, and I'm always a sucker for a good Worf one-liner. That's the parts I appreciated, and the effects, of course.
So, Shields, no, wait, no, no, no.
It wasn't a total loss if you distill it down to 7 minutes. Anyone else?
Actually, no. Tom Hardy, I actually didn't have a problem with him playing the part of Shinzon, but I thought he was okay, except for the character was kind of flat. I just...
Confused is more like it.
Yeah, I'm telling you, this motivation sucks. I don't get it.
The weird thing about it for me was... And now that we have the way to do deep fakes, just the fact that he only vaguely, because they shaved his head,
right,
really looked like Patrick Stewart.
He even said, there's something about the eyes, I'm like, your eyes don't even look close. Don't even get me started on the mouth.
And especially when you have in the same movie a Data and a B4 that look identical. So you go, yeah, that looks like that. I can understand that. And then you look at this and go, this is supposed to look like that. And you go, well, it doesn't really.
Yeah. I think I forgave it a little bit because it has to be two different actors. But nowadays I'd be like,
You better do it.
Yeah. Nowadays I'd be a little more critical of it. But I don't know.
Right. No, I remember, thinking at the time. And that's one of those things that special effects has solved, because as a kid, even sometimes you saw something, you would go, I don't buy this as an actual like dinosaur because it's a stop motion thing and now you don't have that. So I can understand this stuff, but even so, I don't know whether it was the Tom Hardy's face just doesn't look that much like Patrick Stewart's but it was really hard to make that jump to say he's exactly the same.
I did see somebody you may have seen it. It was a deep fake with Patrick Stewart's face on Shinzon.
Yeah.
Right. Deep fake. And I was like, that actually looked pretty good. They did a great job with it.
The problem is you have to then have Patrick Stewart also doing the voice, because in theory he should sound identical.
Well, younger. Yeah.
Right. But it should sound identical. Patrick Stewart would have to do.
Can you go back in time 20 years and redo the dialogue?
Well, I'm saying that if you take that to an extent, it's all right. He should look the same, but he probably shouldn't sound the same. I mean, he shouldn't have the same accent, because that's a product of, now unless it's because that was part of his training to be the clone that takes over. And he had to get down the accent so perfectly that it just became ingrained in him that that's how he was supposed to talk.
Yeah. Oh, maybe he needs a Remus accent.
Yeah.
All you need to do,
like when Ron Perlman had a great Remus accent.
Yeah, exactly.
I don't know.
All you have to do when you're imitating your younger self is raise your voice like they do on Green Arrow.
Hi, how you doing?
Yeah, that's really great. Oh. With purpose. All right, time to be done. So we have to rate this one.
Do we? Do we really?
We do. We do. I don't know, but do we have a rating scale for this one?
Solid 9. I'm just kidding.
1 to 10. Phalerons.
Phalerons. Ooh.
Okay.
They're deadly. Okay.
1 to 10 Shinzons, so Craig can't say.
All right. 1 to 10 Shinzons. All right. 12 Quatlus. All right. Craig, you go first.
I don't think I really hated it. I just didn't like it as much as obviously the others. And I would probably give it I'm kind of torn. I'm saying probably 4.5, maybe. Yeah, 4.5. Let's go with that.
All right. 4.5. That's not bad. I'm going to give it a, because I just.
Solid 8, right?
No, I'm just saying, the one I hate the most is Insurrection. So I can't. So I'll go 4 on it just to have it a little higher.
What did you give Insurrection? A 3 or something? A 2.5?
Yeah, it's just, I think a negative 12, I think, is what I did. No, that's just that.
Hey, there has been a few times I pulled out this movie just to see the battle scene at the end with the ramming, and I'm like.
That was a good collision.
Ramming speed. All right. What about you, Chuck?
5.
5. Right down the middle.
No. We had a 4, a 4.5. 5 is not in the middle.
No, but I mean you. That's no,
you. Your score.
Between 0 and 10. I see what you did there.
What scale were you using then?
Now, we don't know. You listener, you may have different opinions about Nemesis. You may go, that is my favorite Star Trek movie of all time. Because some movie is everybody's favorite movie. If you want to let us know what your opinion is, your thoughts, things you liked about Nemesis, or additional things you didn't like about it that we didn't cover, or give it a rating from 0 to 10 Shinzons.
Maybe you're a member of the Spiner family and you have to like it.
That's right. All righty. But with that, we are done with our main mission. So an appropriate sound effect to come back from that.
Klingon transporter. Sound effects
there.
Very, very fancy.
Guess we're coming back.
That's Borg, isn't it?
And no, Borg? That's Klingon transporter clean.mp3. Oh, Klingon.
Okay. All right. Wow.
All righty. And we're going to go do our warp speed roundtable. And last time around, we asked if Geordi should have kept his visor. I didn't get a chance to check Facebook. Did we get any replies on that one? I think I want to say that we did, and I think that it was somebody that agreed. I'm sorry that I don't.
I'm pulling it up now. Just a minute.
Bit preoccupied with podcast a day, so I'm sorry if I missed your reply.
Warp speed roundtable. Oh no, that was the worst job. Did it not post?
Oh, technical error.
Wah wah.
Someone.
Let's just post it right now and wait for somebody to reply.
Someone broke into the computer again.
I'm sorry. Maybe I put the date in wrong. Oh, well.
All right. Well, we will follow up on that next week. So next episode. So my apologies because I believe somebody did reply someplace, maybe in a separate post on it. So we will follow up on that for next episode. But this time around, we're going to revive an old favorite, the shuttle pod or airlock.
Wait, we had feedback from listener Diane.
We did? No, that was from a previous thing.
That was
show notes there. Shuttle pod or airlock is a place where we discuss a character and we say, should that person get a nice shuttle pod and head off and have all sorts of adventures? Or should they just be sent out the airlock? Now, this time around, we're going to be talking about a beloved character, that chef, that
ambassador of goodwill. No, what was he? He had all kinds of titles.
Of course, we're speaking about Neelix.
Are your favorite Talaxian and mine?
Well, I didn't say it was my favorite Talaxian. I just said we're going to talk about Neelix.
Well, I've only met one.
Oh, okay.
But there were a couple more on the show.
Yeah.
Yes, didn't we meet his wife or something?
Or his brother, one of his business partners that double crossed him again.
Two Vicks.
Oy, yes, that only half counts.
Maybe that's, maybe that should be the question: which is better, Neelix or Tuvix?
Oh,
Neelix.
Oh, hey,
for
we could have shuttle Potter airlock Tuvix. That wouldn't have been much of a contest, but
yeah.
Let me help you with that.
All right, Eric, enough of that. All right, who has something to say in defense of Neelix?
I will.
Okay.
Oh. Yeah, I was at first I was kind of annoyed at the character. Didn't really care for him, but he started to take on more responsibility. He even I don't recall what episode it was, but I recall that he was willing to put his life on the line for his fellow crewmates. And when he did something against Captain's wishes or something, he was truly remorseful. So I think he's a soul worth keeping.
It was a hard read for me on what his true nature was. I mean, you know, that very bubbly personality a lot of time just seemed like you didn't get to know an awful lot about who the character was.
I thought when they got to the edge of his known space, when they got to the expanse or something, he said, I'm not going to be of much use here, so I got to find some other angle or leave. That was sort of an awakening moment for him. And he did realize that he still has a purpose and that they wanted him as part of the crew.
Mm-hmm. Well, season one Neelix, I would have put in the airlock.
Oh, yeah. But, that's what I said. At first, he was kind of irritating.
Yeah. But he did grow on me. I love his loyalty to the crew and the ship and the doctor. I thought he ended up being a pretty good, well-rounded character for a lot of the reasons you just named, Chuck. He was trying to make himself useful when he couldn't. And he was pretty active there towards the end, doing all kinds of stuff. So. Yeah. Keep him.
Okay. Yeah, I think I agree with you that he's a character that when we first encounter him and all through that first season, bit on the annoying side, you know, and you kind of hope that when you get to the end of the space that he knows about that, maybe he should get off the ship. Maybe if there's a planet there or not, he should get off the ship.
Yeah, just
watch that first step.
We're near an asteroid. Just drop him there.
It's fine. It's got a slight gravity. He'll be fine.
Right.
But he did kind of redeem himself over time. And after all, he could make, you know, Janeway a cup of coffee. So obviously she wanted to keep him around.
I did like kind of the running gag of the Leola root soup. the crew just didn't like his food.
Oh, this is weird.
Yes.
Okay.
All right. Okay. So
go on.
I was on Memory Alpha as y'all were talking, and I clicked random picture of the day.
Even Craig has lost interest in this podcast.
No, listen. So the picture of the day is the TNG crew having the wine and glass for Data, which I thought was oddly appropriate since we were just talking about.
Yeah, they were drinking Chateau Picard. Hmm.
Yeah, I mean, I just clicked on random picture of the day and it went pink.
Two absent friends. Oh, you mean Spock and McCoy? No.
Cyborg.
Oh, you mean Barkley? You mean
No. All right, so
I guess we're keeping him.
I guess so. I guess he gets a shuttle pod.
Hooray!
Good work, Neelix. Good work. You redeemed yourself because if you'd stayed the way you were. You wouldn't have gotten a tribble. I don't know if Tribble showed up.
Approves.
Oh, okay. The Tribble
approves. Oh, I see.
You didn't get the angry Tribble, so good job. All right. With that, it's time to think about refilling the lithium chamber and getting on out of here.
Yeah, season three of Discovery made it really hard for us to finish the show, didn't it? We couldn't refill the dilithium chamber.
Yeah. Well, The nice thing is, like I said, we got that little boxcar from that train set, the little train set. There's like an entire boxcar full of dilithium just like overflowing on the top.
Oh, look what we got here.
So, we've got plenty now. No problem whatsoever.
Yeah.
Although we really should. I was going to say we should have a warp core, but given the way the warp core works in Nemesis, maybe we should just stay on impulse power from now on. It's a lot more reliable. Because you always seem to have impulse power. That's it's like you can't do much with it, but you usually have it.
That's why
we always have thrusters.
This is the podcast that runs on impulse power.
So it's not the greatest, but it's always there.
When you had adverse weather conditions and your power goes out, you always got impulse.
Pretty much.
Move on. Tell them where they can find you, Clinton.
All right. Well, you can find me, Clinton, at Comedy Forecast. That's all one word with the number 4. And I'm just wrapping up my 2021 April podcast today. Spectacular.
Oh, thank God. I mean, great.
Yeah. Finally.
Good on you. Maybe there's an award for that.
Yeah, exactly.
Thank you.
The award is called May. That's the award for doing that. You don't have to do anything. And you can find me on Instagram and Twitter and all the usual suspects. So look for me there because that's where I am. Yeah, who speaks for you guys?
We're flipping the tribble now to find out who.
Outside.
It's going to be Neelix if you don't.
Whoa. I flipped him over. He's upside down. Trouble. Sorry. So you can find Chuck and I over at the Technorama podcast. Just search for Technorama podcast in Google, and you'll find us all over the place and in your favorite podcatcher of choice. So there you go. Over at chuckchat.com.
Sounds good. Premium subscriptions coming soon via Apple Podcasts.
Hey, really?
No, I don't think so. Anyway, all right, so it's time to hit the theme. If you like the show, please be sure to tell a friend about it, say subscribe, and never miss an episode. Came up on me really fast. We'd love to hear from you. Follow us on Twitter at The Topic Is Trek. Visit our Facebook page or visit thetopicistrek.com. Until next time, on behalf of Chuck, Craig, and myself, I'm Clinton, thanking you for listening. And as we always say here on The Topic Is Trek,
Don't put on the red shirt.
I question Neelix's choices in women, though.
Put the shins on.
Shins off. Why don't the lights in my studio go out all of a sudden?